Hello, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. My name is Emily Austin, and I am with the Episcopal Church in West Tennessee. And each week we come to you from our studio at our radio home at Crosstown Concourse, WYXR 91.7 FM. And we thank WYXR for always making space for us and making space for lots of voices here in Memphis and our community, and kind of uplifting those stories that you may not hear and the music that we love about that just celebrates who we are as a community. It is the end of November 2023. Does it feel like we've been in 2023 for a long time? It feels that way to me. I feel like we have been living in this space for nigh on 20 years. This 2023 has been quite a year. There's been a lot of hard stuff, a lot of good stuff, but a lot of hard stuff too. And so I'm thinking a lot recently about how we are about to shift into the season of Advent. Advent is the weeks of the Nativity. It's where we lead up to the birth of Christ. And so next week when we come to you for Faithfully Memphis, we will be within the season of Advent. And so I just wish you peace and hopefulness as we enter into this sacred, holy space of waiting and watching. But first, let's talk about the saint of the day. So today is the feast of Saint Andrew the Apostle. And most biographical notes on this quote-unquote apostle begin with Andrew was Simon Peter's brother, and he is so described in the Gospels. But identifying Andrew as Peter's brother makes it easy to know who he is, but it also makes it easy to overlook the fact of Andrew's own special gift to the company of Christ. The Gospel according to John tells how Andrew, a disciple of John the Baptist, who of course was Jesus's cousin and in a lot of, seen as the forerunner of Christ, Andrew was one of the two disciples who followed Jesus after John had pointed him out saying, "Behold the Lamb of God," and you'd read that in the Gospel of John. Andrew and the other disciple went with Jesus and stayed with him, and Andrew's first act afterward was to find his brother and bring him to Jesus. So we might call Andrew the first missionary in the company of the disciples. He's the one who brought someone new to Christ's inner circle, if you will. And though Andrew was not part of the inner circle of disciples, Peter, James, and John, he is always named in the list of disciples. And the Gospel of Matthew records Jesus' calling them from their occupation and their immediate response to his call. Andrew was also the disciple who brought the boy with the loaves and the fishes to Jesus for the feeding of the multitude. That is one of my favorite Bible stories from when I was a little girl. You know, there's so many vivid images in the Bible that appeal to us when we're small. And I remember hearing that story about how Jesus was preaching and bringing in so many people who wanted to listen, and they didn't plan for these multitudes to come. And from what I understand, normally when there would be a preaching opportunity like that, it could go on for a long, long time, and people would be coming in from far and wide. So think like, you know, we're just coming off of Thanksgiving, and think like you're traveling across the country to be with your family. However, when, you know, you have people who are traveling and you have these great multitudes, there just wasn't enough to eat. There wasn't enough to pass around. And that, of course, is that image of feeding the 5,000. They didn't have enough on hand, but there's this miracle where Andrew brings this little boy who had just some loaves and some fishes. And then the story is that Jesus miraculously divides them so that he can feed the multitudes. We hear little of Andrew as a prominent leader, and he seems always to be in the shadow of Peter. There is an early church historian whose name I am not going to try to pronounce, but I'll put him in the show notes. And he records Peter going to Scythia, but there is no reliable information about the end of Peter's life. There's a tradition and a story that has it that Andrew was fastened to an X-shaped cross and suffered death at the hands of angry pagans. I always kind of cringe at that word, but that's what the text says. Hands of angry pagans, and he is now the patron saint of Scotland. But those accounts are not, they're kind of, you can do some research and see if that is in line with your understanding and your narrative of who St. Andrew was. But I want to go back a little bit to that story of St. Andrew being this person who brings this little boy to Jesus, through that interaction, 5,000 people were fed. And I want to go back and think again about how he brings his brother to follow Christ. And the thing that strikes me is that we see St. Andrew as kind of a minor role. He's not someone who, he plays a supporting role, but you can't map the early church and the effectiveness of the ministry of Christ without this supporting player. And honestly, that's who I think I connect with that. I connect with that identity. I don't have to be the person, and you don't have to be the person who is the star of the show. You don't have to feel like the main character all the time. A lot of us don't want to be the main character. We want to play supporting roles, and we want to, because they're just as important. And that is my I take a lot of comfort in that when I reflect on who St. Andrew is. So let's pray. This is the collect for the feast of St. Andrew. Almighty God, who gave such grace to your apostle Andrew that he readily obeyed the call of your son Jesus Christ and brought his brother with him, give us who are called by your holy word grace to follow him without delay, and to bring those near to us into his gracious presence, who lives and reigns with you and the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. We'll be right back with Faithfully Memphis. And we're back with Faithfully Memphis. What we just listened to was a chant from the Orthodox Church, and I believe Armenia, and that was a chant in celebration of St. Andrew. But we're back with Faithfully Memphis, and again, this is Emily Austin, and today I am delighted and so already feeling like my blood pressure is like being brought down because Jasmine Miller is here with us today in the studio. Hey, Jazz.
Hey.
How are you?
I am well.
And we're not here alone. Tell about who else is in here, because when you walked in with your friend, I just about like, I was like, I needed this today.
Oh my goodness. So there are two. Mm-hmm. There's four of us. There's Emily, there's me, and there's my dog, Joffy,
yeah.
And there's his dog, Snugglepup.
Yeah, so we're all here in the WYXR studio this morning, just like having our blood pressure lowered and our equilibrium fixed by our little canine friends. So I highly, highly recommend coming on down to Crosstown, because this is a very pup-friendly area.
It's so true.
But anyway, Jazzy, you are you do a whole lot, which I feel in a like we are kin in that. You are the director of the Carpenter Art Garden here in Memphis. You are an artist and a filmmaker, and you do a lot of volunteer work. You and I first met probably in around maybe 2015 or 2016 when you were working at Crosstown Arts.
Yes.
And then, of course, we sort of entered each other's orbits again earlier this year because Noah Campbell, you know, y'all are in that kind of that sphere of people who are taking good care of the earth and are also artists. And so, of course, Noah is the director of the Reverend Dr. Noah Campbell is the director of the Barth House Episcopal Center and the founder of Memphis Tilth. So that's something that is.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
if you're listening, Noah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was on the I think the ground floor with Memphis
Tough. What?
So that's, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I think that's right. But anyway, if it's not, then I'll delete this from the show. But he's real crunchy.
He's right.
Yeah, he's real crunchy. He cares about the world. And he's also like big into art and making sure that art that matters gets out into the world. And that is what the kind of work that you make. And so I'll go ahead and say at the very top that we're next week. Is it a week from today?
It's a week from today.
A week from today, December 7th. Mm-hmm. You're going to be giving a talk at the Barth House Episcopal Center about your documentary, Jonesland.
Mm-hmm.
And in a minute we'll talk. I mean, that's so integral to the work that you're doing and your family and the exhibit and all this stuff, but you're going to be giving a talk on that. And so, so I want to, before I forget, and I know we're going to get into deep conversation, definitely go to our website, go on our social media, and you can learn more about that talk that, Jazzy's going to be giving. But anyway, now that I've gotten all the little like things that we have to say out of the way, how are you?
How am I? Ooh, I am. Girl, I'm tired. I'm happy. I'm ready for Christmas. It is, as you say, there's lots going on, but I feel like our culture can definitely relate to that, with all of the many things and many streams, but we have to remember to be kind to ourselves. So that is a, that's a lesson that I'm not learning. I've learned that, but I'm trying to obey.
Yeah, well, we have to relearn it almost, for at least me, I have to relearn it every single day because every day throws in a new context that I didn't necessarily anticipate.
Oh my goodness. You know, there's a piece of theology on the edge of my mind. And if you allow me to go there, I just want to say
it.
That. Faithfully Memphis. I feel like I can say this. But, before I worked for Carpenter Art Garden, before I worked for Crosstown Arts, I was missionary for 7 years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
learning about all of my friends
goodness.
Today.
Oh my god! I mean, like all over this world, except Australia and New Zealand and Antarctica. Of course, I never went to those places. But one of the things that we talked about is like, I did not know this, but one of the things that Jesus talks about more than anything in his sermons is listening. Mm-hmm. He who has ears, let him hear. Mm-hmm. And that same word for hearing, for listening, is obedience. So it's not just like hearing the thing, but it's like obeying the thing.
Ooh.
So I'll just say, like, how many things have we heard and heard again, but we have not obeyed it? And so one of the things that I'm learning right now, when you say, how are you? I am learning to obey the command to rest.
Mm-hmm.
We take that one as a suggestion. It's not a suggestion. It's a command.
I feel that. And I also feel like over the last several years, my during the pandemic, during that 2020, 2021 period especially, that was where I, for the first time, realize there is a finite amount of energy and myself to give. Because I borrowed against myself. And when we do that, you're going to deplete yourself.
Yeah.
We have to rest. We have to take it very seriously.
We have to.
Well, I'm blessing you. I am sending you a blessing in this period of rest. And I hope that you find it. But I'm also going to sag into, like, at least from the outsider looking in, it's going to be hard for you to do that because you've got so much going on. And I feel like with people like you and me, like, even if you don't have a whole lot on the calendar, the mind is always going. Your mind is always like thinking about a thing.
Yeah.
And when you and I, when I first met you, well, when I first like really talked to you earlier this year, and when we were talking about Jonesland and the exhibit and the documentary, I remember the first, the thing that was coursing through my mind the whole time is like, this woman had, well, I don't want to put words into your mouth. Talk to me about extractivism and the, and how the history of this space in Louisiana is being informed by what's going on there now. And I'll preclude what I'm saying with, this is the kind, when your mind is always going, when you're paying attention, you notice the things that you noticed when you embarked on this piece of creative work and research. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now.
Oh, no, no. I can tell that you were listening when I was, because what I remember is like, I was just talking a whole lot. And when I talk about this subject, I feel like I can't say enough, because it has been probably the most impactful thing, aside from faith and meeting God and knowing who God is. It's been the most impactful thing in my life. So it's great to talk about. So I just want to say, you know, there's a podcast on you can find it on Apple, you can find it on Spotify, called Plot of Land. Episodes 8 and 9 cover Jonesland, in case anybody wants to know more about that. There's an exhibit, as you mentioned, and there's a documentary. So there are three things. And so the exhibit, extractivism, what is that word even, right? Like, you've got the word extraction and the word activism into one word. So just to start, just to stop at the word extraction, what is extraction? When you hear extraction, what do you think about? I personally think about oil coming out of the ground. I think about, you know, you go to the dentist, they extract a tooth coming out of your, like, I mean,
it's kind of painful. Extracting is painful.
It is. It is. And, especially when you think of extraction as a thing where you were taking without the intent to replenish. So when you're taking oil from the ground, you're not thinking about putting it back, right? And even if it's going to replenish itself, it's several years, maybe millions of years before that happens. So let's just stop right there. Oil. You're taking something without replenishing. Think about how we do that in our culture. We, you know, it's something that's influenced me as a leader. You look at a week, there's 7 days in a week, there are 24 hours in a day. Even as a nonprofit, right? Like, for profit should definitely be listening to this, but like, you can work your staff in a way that you are extracting every ounce of labor that you can get to move the company forward but like paying them a certain rate, right?
Capitalism.
To meet your bottom line, you know, like, without the intent to replenish, right? The idea is to invest, to pour into the company. I think about our, you know, nonprofit. What would it be like to have everyone working 7 days a week with the children, which is ultimately a good thing? You know, you want the kids to have everything that they need. What kind of leader would I be if I asked everyone to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day? If I asked myself to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, paying everybody $15 an hour because you write that into a grant and it's quote unquote living wage. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, I sure do.
Extraction can look so many different ways. It's not a good thing. And so,
but I like your working definition of, you are pulling something out at a rate that is not sustainable, and it's not going to be replenished.
Right.
And I feel like you're prioritizing what you're pulling out.
Yeah.
And you're not prioritizing the systems and the people and the assets to make that extraction possible.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so you relate that to, so my background, I was born in Memphis, but my mother's from St. James, Louisiana. I spent most of my summers there as a child. I loved going out there. You've got sugarcane fields. It's the country. I'm kind of a tomboy. So I love being outside. There are over 3,000 people in my family. So, you know, you go from one house to the other house to the other house.
Really? And you're 3,000?
3,000. Of course, we're all scattered. Over, but you know, but a lot, but most of them live in St. James, Louisiana, where we have land on the river. And you know, we, you think about that community and other communities in the area, Black communities, have experienced extraction for a very long time in so many different definitions, right? And some, I'm sorry, not in so many different ways. And so that corridor of the river is called Cancer Alley, so, you know, my family has land in Cancer Alley. And but if you look 200 years back, this was also this, you know, that land was called two things, Death Alley and Millionaire's Mile. So you got a lot of death going on and you've got a lot of wealth going on. And those two things are correlated. 2023. That is where Formosa Plastics, a $9 billion company out of Taiwan, is trying to build their 13-plex plastics site. So you got a lot of wealth going on, and it's Cancer Alley. You've got a lot of death going on. And so what does extraction look like? Labor from the body 200 years ago, sugar from the ground, oil from the land, and today, like, a life from... a human, and all for profit.
It's all for because commodification.
That's right. All because we want to make money.
And so that's what the exhibit and the documentary is about. And the documentary features you interviewing different members of your family and different people who have different members of your family who have been approached to sell their land or talk about what goes on.
Yeah. So if I could give you a fun little history there.
Please do.
I 2020 rolled around. Y'all know what happened then. We were all at home and we were all, you know, sheltering in place because nobody wanted to get sick. And I had the opportunity to think a lot about something that had come up in our family years ago. And that is that we have this land. It's 66 acres and it's a narrow, long strip. And supposedly there's oil there. And a company, you know, comes along out of Texas and says, hey, we know that there's oil on this land. And, of course, the younger generations, my generation, younger generations than mine are going, what? There's oil. Are we going to be rich? You know, we don't know. And little did we know that the people living there, that the older generations have always known that it was there. And so, so that has always like kind of sat with me. And then fast forward to 2020, I'm like, geez, I've got the opportunity. Well, two things are going on, the virus, but also we're hearing about elderly communities catching COVID and passing away, just being a vulnerable population. And I was thinking, man, what happens if, you know, my family gets sick and I don't have an opportunity to hear these stories of like how they know that there's oil in their childhood and their, you know. And so
when there's a sense of mortality, that I think that's when we're more likely to want to. Like, okay, we need to figure out what we need to know about ourselves through through those living histories.
Right.
That are only living with our people who are around.
Yeah, exactly. And I tell you, 2021 rolled around, got the vaccine, masked up, got my little rig together, and I went down there to the family church, to different churches along the river, and I set up interviews. You know, a safe way to do it. one-on-one and just started asking them questions.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up on the land? What did you grow? How did you know to grow it? Like, how did you grow it? Who taught you? Did you ever talk to family members before you? What do you remember about oil? And man, and of course, because they're my family members and they practically raised me, there's a comfort there. So there's a fun artistry to those interviews like,
I love it.
You know, I'm not someone from PBS. I'm like somebody that they're giving direction to from behind the camera. So,
I love that. And there is something so specific to that, too. I was, you know, we're just coming off of Thanksgiving and I saw, was at my aunt's house, who is my person.
So
My aunt, my paternal aunt is like, is my person.
Yeah.
And being able to be at the table with her and there is that family language. Mm-hmm. I code switch to be with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be mostly myself. And I feel like those conversations, when we're with family our family that we're comfortable with.
Right.
Boy, that's where truth can like beautiful truth comes out.
Yeah.
So I can, when I saw the bits, I haven't seen the full documentary yet, but the bits I have seen, that shines through.
Yeah
It's beautiful.
The personalities are really great, but you know, in talking to them and hearing about when they were harvesting potatoes in the garden as kids, and you know, one day they're getting this reddish blackish contaminant on their shoes and afraid to go home because that's their only pair of shoes, and I'm gonna be in so much trouble, and going home and Mom looking at the shoes and just being like, get rid of them and never talk about this again.
Yeah.
What?
It's like, what?
Yeah.
What another is this?
Family member like getting water out of the well and finding this shimmer on the surface, and family being like, never talk about that again. Like a community of a couple hundred people keeping this mysterious thing coming out of the ground a secret. And everyone quietly knew that there was oil on the land, but this is a black community in 1923 who's, you know, purchased this property that in Jim Crow South, Southern Louisiana, it's a no-brainer what's going to happen if you talk about what kind of resource you've got.
Yeah.
So living on the land and having that was more important than anything. More important than extracting oil out of the ground in exchange for you don't have somewhere to live. You don't have somewhere to grow crops. You don't have somewhere to build community and family. And so so that was really interesting to me. And I kind of thought that would be the end of the journey. I was like, I just want to talk about the oil. But I was finding that people also wanted to talk about what was happening, like, in the current day. Like, and that is Cancer Alley.
Yeah.
Petrochemical companies to the left, to the right, to the front, to the back, right across the river. Because remember, this is land on the river. And if you can imagine it, it's a long strip. Mm-hmm. And you'd grow crops down that long strip of land to the back. But everyone lives to the front. Mm-hmm. That alone, that legacy comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Everyone lives to the front. Things are grown to the back in rows. Where does that come from? It's not like it's a farming practice that my family just pulled out of nowhere.
Right.
Because 200 years ago, this was plantation country, and this was sugar land, and this is where rows of sugar were grown, and your land is on the mouth, is on the riverfront, and the great houses, right? Oak Alley. Everybody knows Oak Alley. If you've seen Gone with the Wind, if you've seen, oh goodness, so many films Oak Alley is in, but...
I think... The thing that a good way for me to remember it is like in the film Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of the image that pops into my mind.
Yep. So I'll get to do this talk that I'm doing at Barth House at Whitney Plantation at the beginning of March.
Yeah.
And that is like a stone's throw. That plantation house is a stone's throw from where Whitney is. So pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly it. Django Unchained, Plantation House. So Cancer Alley / Death Alley / Millionaire's Miles, Millionaire's Miles / Millionaire's Row mm-hmm. is the same corridor. So that's from Baton Rouge down the river to New Orleans. It's about a 70-mile stretch of mm-hmm. river. Mm-hmm. And so that's the area we're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so how... Set the stage for me on how you, I mean, it's amazing whenever I get to talk with artists about something that they clearly are passionate about and something mm-hmm. that they clearly, it's not just passion, but it's like something that inspires them and has, and then they create something around it like you have. Mm-hmm. Set the stage for me on like how you got to that point. Like, have you always been telling stories? Have you always been asking questions? And like, mm-hmm. if you had to like pinpoint maybe two or three spots in your life that kind of brought you to where you're at now, where you're mm-hmm. in nonprofit leadership mm-hmm. that integrates natural stewardship of the land, but also, I mean, you can't be a good steward of the land without being a good steward of the people on the land.
Mm-hmm.
Talk me back to baby Jasmine.
Like, oh, that's
how,
so funny.
How did we get to where you're at now, where mm-hmm. this is the work that you do? And
mm-hmm. that's a great question. Thank you for asking me that. Let's see. I have always been a theater kid. I loved yeah. doing theater growing up. I was a swimmer. That has little to do with what I'm doing now, except that it creates a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. something I yeah. would have stuck with if my parents didn't like hold me to it. But yeah. But swimming for 3 hours at a time
wow.
will
yeah.
teach you perseverance.
Yeah.
And so it's been 3 years. I've been working on this project. And I mean, every week.
Yeah,
I'm doing something with this project. So perseverance, right? But I was always a theater kid. Always loved storytelling. Always loved being told a story. Always loved telling one. Always loved reading books. Always loved reading plays. So much so that I majored in it in college. Mm-hmm. Went and got my MFA in theater direction. Mm-hmm. And told the faculty up front, I'm not really interested in going to Broadway. I'm more interested in the framework and what is the Western framework for storytelling? Because we're in the West mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that's how people understand, like that's the framework we have. And I don't mean from like a European, Western, I mean, we read left to right.
Yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. when we look at a stage, pay attention to what you're thinking. You pay attention to center mm-hmm. and you're looking for actors to come from the left side
yes.
because like mm-hmm. that's how you read. Like I wanted the technical pieces of that. So I'll say, you know, the two things that really impacted what I'm doing now is one, so being a missionary for mm-hmm. 7 years and mostly going to those villages, towns, cities in Africa mm-hmm. where you meet children, their generations have never seen slavery mm-hmm. To see like how colonialism has really impacted how they see philanthropy, how they see themselves, how they see the land that they're on. Going to those farms where people are working, right, all the time. Extraction. It's not slavery. And I won't say that it's similar, right, because we have choices, but how we all come to those choices differently. Just like meeting people who are working on these farms that they don't necessarily own,
mm-hmm.
And the people who own them, what they look like, versus the people who are working yeah. on them, what they look like. Like
yeah.
spending time in those contexts for a long time and just developing a passion for just all people. Like I am so grateful to God for white people and black people and Latinx people and Asian people, and like that he can be so incredibly diverse in mm-hmm. what he does, but how incredibly broken we are and how our world sees things, you know, like there's a fallenness here, and that's to be mourned. But but I think one of the things that I developed a passion for is when you look at this planet and this globe, how and why land is something to be commodified and owned and tamed and gathered in masse, right? Like Louisiana wouldn't have been what it was if it weren't for Napoleon, who was a male expansionist, right? Yeah. Like land is something to be commodified. I don't even know that it was something to be commodified and owned before America was founded, but how we, and same for Africa. I'm really not sure how, the continent viewed land as a commodity or not before it was colonized. But we do know that today, how people interact on it, how migration happens, there are sometimes losers. And the quote unquote losers tend to look more like me.
Yes.
And so Cancer Alley, the losers, I'm not only related to, but like they look like me, right? These are black communities who are not winning these wars with petrochemical. And the communities who are winning them actually look all sorts of ways, but it's not coming from a black historical context, right? Like there's no choice in the matter. Right, and so like very, very early on, I started developing a passion for black spaces and what justice and equity looks like.
Yeah.
And two, storytelling. You know, I traveled a one-woman show on Sojourner Truth during that 7 years.
Wow. In Africa, you got to tell the story of Sojourner Truth.
I did.
That is so unique to me. Because that, I mean, her story, I laugh because I have an 11-year-old and we were in the car talking about something the other day and she mentioned Sojourner Truth and I was like, oh, you know who Sojourner Truth is? And she's like, Mom, I've known who Sojourner Truth was since like first grade. I'm like, okay, good on you. But like she is someone who we know about as Americans, or at least I did.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to get taught that in the state of Tennessee before things became the way that they are now.
Yeah.
But that is so neat to me that you got to talk about her within the context of being an American black woman in Africa.
Yep. And what we, and too, like the part of her story that isn't talked about, she grew up in a Dutch colony up north. Like Dutch was her first language.
Yeah.
Also, she's 6'1". I'm 6'1". And so and we also don't know, you know, she spent 2 years in a cult called the Matthias Delusion. Yes, so I'm like, this woman walked away.
I learned about that recently. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like, I did. I was listening to a podcast and it came. I was like, what? Wow.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
And it's nothing that she doesn't talk about it in her biography. You have to, there's a book called The Matthias Delusion and it talks about one very tall black woman who was, and it kind of gives you a backstory. But just even like what motivates her to leave slavery because she walks away one day, legit leaves all of her children. That's complicated, except for her littlest baby. And she walks away into freedom. Not until her 40s. She renames herself Sojourner Truth right after she's had this incident in this cult, which she walks straight into. So she essentially walks straight back into slavery. So like, too, you know, the things in our communities that keep us in bondage, where we willfully go, okay, this is something that I'm going to participate in. You know, anyways, it's just like our stories are complex. The whole issue of like living in this world is really complex. And so,
and it's like what we were talking about earlier, how you have to recalibrate. I mean, when you are examining yourself on a day-to-day basis, it's like I feel that impetus to take what I've learned the day before into this day and like adjust. How am I going to be a better citizen of the world? How am I going to be the person that God wants me to be? And who he that God made me to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that takes work.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, like, here I am talking about, like, extraction staff. Like, you can't work 7 days a week. Some of us don't even work 5 days a week. Like, some of us are just 4 days a week. And it's like, you know, you got to rest. And then there's me, you know, catching myself. I'm working 7 days a week, you know, 14 hours a day, like, extracting upon myself. Like, it's complex.
Yeah.
It's, you know, obey the thing. Obey the command, Jazzy.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, do it. Do it.
You know?
Obey it. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have our community. That's why we need each other.
Yeah.
It's because we, in a way, we are all we have.
Yeah.
All we have are each other.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are in deep relationship with people, we can say to one another, I want you to continue being the best you, because the best you helps to help us be the best us.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I care about you, and I want you to honor yourself as much as we want to honor you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes, like, perfect sense.
Like, our, the commune, there is, we are, I'm going to get kind of woo-woo, but, like, we, all we have are each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to love ourselves with the same ferocity that we love the unity of our community and congregations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we got to work at that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I'm here for, I'm like cheering you on. Oh, I think
I'm cheering you on. You're doing good stuff.
Well, I think that, when we keep our ear to the ground and we see these kind of injustices, and also when we're creative people, our minds are always going, and we are all our own worst enemy sometime, in that we, the static noise, you know, I don't know if in your apartment, I don't know what the apartments are like here at Crosstown. I know I've been in one, but at home, I have this hood over my stove. And whenever I've got the oven going, or I'm making something on the stove, I have to turn on the fan. And it makes this sound. It's just like this fan sound. And it's so chaotic and loud. And it stresses me out. And that's how I feel like the mind can be a lot of the time when you are in, when you're living in a community that is where we see the systemic injustice, it's historic injustice, that continues, like the kind that you've observed, and our minds are going at how can we fix it, how can we make it better, and it can get to be a lot. It that noise is deafening.
Yeah.
And we gotta silence it.
Oh my goodness. You're so right. You're so, and my, and I do have that. My, the hood of my stove does have that whooshing sound. And I use it quite often because I cook a lot. I enjoy that. I think too, I'm gonna say this, like, because I can't speak for anyone else. Maybe we all experience it, but I think as a Black woman in America, this is like, you become accustomed to that noise and you're just like, okay. Yeah. Like, and you have to create spaces where it doesn't exist. One of those is in rest. One of those is in home. One of those is in community. But being out there, you just like accept that that is, it is what it is. And, you know, sometimes I'll have conversations with people, that I naturally have to do life with out in the world. And, you know, it, they bring all their mistakes, they bring all of their biases and their prejudices, and I think, and I believe we all have them, and we all have to do the work. But we don't all come to that in the same way. And you know, I hear the noise, and you, but you develop grace for that.
Yeah.
You know,
Oof.
And like that's compassion for that. And I think sometimes we can hear the noise and really pull the fangs out and mm-hmm. want to. And there is time to do business and go to war. I mean,
yeah,
I'm going to war with it right now. It's been 3 years I've been working on this thing, and there's been a lot of pushback. I've got some scary stories for you.
I'm sure
they got my license plate in Louisiana, so yeah. I don't really drive my car down that corridor anymore. I'm not kidding. But I think one-on-one, I don't know. God has given me such a compassion and a grace for those who just haven't chosen, you know, to listen yet.
Yeah. That is a gift. That's a gift.
Yeah.
Because I relate a lot to that, having that grace.
Yeah.
Because I know that it is not easy.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I'm like, I look back on my own life. I think about times when I cringe thinking about short-sightedness that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I cringe, but I'm like, I wasn't where I am at now.
Yeah.
And everyone else is that whenever I don't know everything, and mm-hmm. we're all learning together, and being able to extend that grace.
Yeah.
That's what helps me sleep at night. It's yeah. just being like, you know what? That's why we need Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why that's what the whole, for me, that's what God is about.
Yeah.
It's just, we're going to get there together.
Yeah.
We have 3 minutes left.
What?
Can you believe it?
No.
Yeah, we have 3 minutes left. This is like, I could talk to you all morning. But this has been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, in the time that we have remaining, what, you know, we're talking about rest, and we're talking about living in this world that is very broken, but being just, you can't not do something. I mean, that's what I'm like, the underlying subtext in what you're saying is like, you can't mm-hmm. not do something.
Yeah.
What has been giving you joy Ooh. Lately? Like, what has been the thing that has yeah. been getting you up in the morning and moving forward? Oh, man.
I got to say, there's a couple of things. So get you a dog, a Cavapoo, or whatever you need to get. Yeah. Jaffe gives me a lot of joy. I don't want to be cliche, but like, God really does give me a lot of joy, and gives me the most joy, because he's usually the one to point to the things that like, hey, why don't you focus on this today? Yeah. And I got to say, getting out of town, like yeah. getting to a quiet space, I tend to drift towards farmhouses.
Yeah.
That's my new kick. I so badly want to buy a farmhouse and move into one
yeah.
In the outskirts of the city. Mm-hmm. And I think about that and like just kind of look at real estate and dream and envision where I want to be. And that, I got to say, that brings me a lot of joy. The children at Carpenter Art Garden yeah. bring me a lot of joy. They're hysterical.
Yeah.
They're so funny. I mean, like my coworkers, Tarlisa and Sarah and everybody will tell you, they will shoot you a quip. Or a piece of wit real quick. So they're really restorative. I like to be outside when they get out of school. And then being with family.
I love it.
Yeah.
Jazzy Miller, thank you so much for being with me this morning.
Thank you.
On Faithfully Memphis. Y'all,
thank you.
This has been, we've talked about a lot, but go to our website and you can learn about Joan's Land and the artist talk that's coming up next week.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn about all the things that are happening mm-hmm. in our Episcopal communities here in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Emily Austin, and I am so grateful that you joined us with this morning. EDWTN.org is where you can learn about the Episcopal Church in West Tennessee. And until next week, I wish you positivity and safety. Bye.
Yes, it is. Whoa.